You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There it is. There's that sound. It's the sound of another episode, show for the Roto Experts in the Morning this Sunday morning, April 2nd, 2017. And George, we got ourselves some baseball, buddy. How are you doing?
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing okay. We got some baseball, official baseball on tap. We can argue whether or not we think today is opening day or tomorrow's opening day. Frankly, I shade towards tomorrow, Monday being the official opening day. But the way they do it now, they give us a sort of a soft open with three games today. But I'm excited. The Yankees are actually, gosh, I can't remember the last time that they were the first team playing and kicking off the MLB season. So no NFL to compete with, probably a little bit of NBA to compete with, but the national championship game is set. Gonzaga plays North Carolina tomorrow night. We don't have to deal with college basketball, and the Yankees are playing the Rays. Tanaka versus Archer, pretty good pitching matchup to start the season.
Yeah, baseball always has a different feel than when football opens. Maybe it's because football, you know, football Sunday, you and I and everybody else in this industry is so busy. Yeah, we're answering questions, sending lines, doing radio shows, whatever it might be on Sunday mornings. Baseball's more of a romance, you know. Yes, you and I are doing a show till 10, but that's more relaxing. You know, you got a couple of hours till game time. You get set up for it. Even the games itself, you know. I'm still somebody who reads the newspapers, Mike, and I'm thinking, oh, you know, Newsday is a big 24, 48 page pullout, and I'd like to read this. I got to get done before. No, I really don't have to get it done before the game. I can read it during the game. You know, you can do other things during a baseball game, and you're okay. Football, you need to, you know, it's just more of a war zone. You need to plant yourself down, watch 18 games at once, and really everything has to sink in. Baseball's more relaxing.
I think that's entirely true. I never heard anybody phrase it quite like that, but I concur with you. It's a pretty good comparison. With football, frankly, every Sunday you're blowing by 6% of the entire season, so there is a lot more pressure on there. In baseball, you can't even get towards 1% of the season each and every game that they play. So in football, you feel like you need to be prepared for a significant part of the season each and every Sunday. And some of those games mean more than others, obviously, so it ramps up each and every week. But needless to say, we got three games today. Tanaka versus Archer at 1:10. Bumgarner versus Greinke at 4:10. That's Eastern time. And then the Cubs and Cardinals. That's Giants D-backs to the uninitiated. And then the Cubs play the Cardinals tonight. John Lester against Carlos Martinez. Six solid pitchers, although we could obviously argue that Zach Greinke is coming off a miserable season. We'll see if he can bounce back, but he hasn't been that sharp this spring.
Yeah, it's Greinke. Listen, we know he didn't pitch well last year, right? Didn't pitch well at all last year, first season in Arizona, you know, leaving Chavez Ravine, going to the Bob, or whatever they call that stadium nowadays. Different ballparks. One's a big pitcher's ballpark. One's a much better hitter's ballpark. Maybe he didn't make the adjustments, but whatever it might be. But this spring doesn't look any better, and he's lost some velocity. You know, I don't think velocity is everything, Mike, in baseball. You can learn to pitch without velocity, but the problem is you have to pitch without velocity. You know, and you and I are a Yankee fan. It's taken Sabathia years to figure that out. And
yeah, to his credit, to his credit, he's done it to some extent, but, you know, he's not what Zach Greinke was.
Well, Sabathia was better than what Zach Greinke was at one point.
At one point in time, this is true. I'm just saying, at the height of Zach Greinke's powers, Sabathia hasn't been at that level in a while.
Right, but the point is, how long will it take Greinke to make that adjustment? If he's not going to pitch at 93, 94 anymore, but he's going to be 90, 91, then he's got to become a pitcher, not a thrower. And that's always the problem. You can't throw a high fastball at 91 down Broadway. It's going to get hit 9 miles, especially in Arizona. You can't make mistakes there anyway. So that's my worry with Greinke. I stayed away from him in all leagues. I have two drafts tonight. I won't be taking Greinke in either one. I don't trust him right now. The value, there would have to be such immense value where he goes right now. For him to be available around 10, 11, 12, somewhere around there for me to take him in an auction tonight. He'd have to be available for single digits for me to grab him. Don't trust him right now at all.
Yeah, you know, he's 33 years old. He'll be 33 the entire season, you know, eliminating any opportunity for them to make the World Series. He turns 34 in October. So he'll be around there the whole year. And, you know, according to NFBC, let's see, Seth Greinke, I'm trying to find where he's been going. I'm blanking on where he's at right now, so I apologize, but usually I can get that listed pretty quickly. Zach Greinke, there we go, 27th starting pitcher going, our 109th pick overall, so you can do the math, and in terms of an auction, we can look up the values at later, but certainly a guy that you're scared away from. I would be too. Anybody can have a value at a certain point, so it's just up to you to take the chance on a guy. And as you said, unlikely to get into the single digits in an auction. Somebody's going to take a shot at him, and you know, we'll see how that goes for you and your drafts tonight. Two drafts tonight, correct?
Yes, I have the draft with the RotoWire. That's at 8 o'clock. That's an auction. That's a big team. That's 16 teams, 40-man rosters. We it's sort of like what Matt Modica said, one of his leagues a while back. We only auction the first 23 players. The last 17 are reserves and minor leaguers. But it's a big-time keeper league. So although it sounds big, I kept 15 players, so I'm only auctioning 8 players. And then the 17-round reserve draft, I kept 9 minor leaguers. I'm only reserving for 8 rounds. So for me personally, the auction shouldn't be that long. And then I have my what's the other league I have going? Oh, the Roto Experts league tonight. I don't know if anybody else, I don't know who else is in. I don't think there are any really huge names other than Tim McCullough. I guess it was first come, first serve, and those guys didn't get in. And that's a straight 12-team 5x5.
And that's a snake draft.
It better be. I can't do two auctions at once.
Yeah.
No, it's a snake draft. I know it is.
So give me an idea of that RotoWire league. Well, who are some other guys that are in it? Sounds like kind of an expert setup. So anybody else that we know that might be in that league?
Sure, it is an expert league. It's guys who work for RotoWire, or used to work for RotoWire, for that matter, and I've been in that league a long time. Derek Van Riper, Tim Schuler, two of the bigger names at RotoWire, and along with other names I'm sure you've heard of. John Taverzo, he's covers the Penguins, a big Pittsburgh guy. Jan Levine, the Rangers. Like I said, a whole bunch of guys who work for RotoWire. You know RotoWire, you know these guys. But DVR and Tim Schuler would be the big names. I don't think Jeff Erickson is in that league.
Got it. Yeah, Jeff Erickson was around last week. Obviously, he participated in, I think, a couple of the different Tout Wars leagues. I thought you can only do one, but I feel like I saw his name on more than one league last week. He at least did the AL Tout Wars, I believe. Jeff Erickson, a big name in the industry, obviously a really competitive guy. So, and I think we do our football dynasty league with him, our IDP dynasty league. I think he's in that one. Jeff's constantly in the mix, playing a lot of different leagues and competing pretty well. So, what are you most excited for on this opening day, George? Is it the fact that the Yankees happen to be playing, or you just, at this point, you just need a little baseball in your life?
You know, I love opening day. There's just something romantic about baseball opening day. Maybe it's because you and I, we live here in the Northeast. That means warmer weather is coming. I mean, if you were here yesterday, it was cold. It was just cold and damp yesterday. And today,
brutal.
I think it's going to be around 60. So 60 degrees, I'll take 60. So that's nice. It's a little sunny out. So I think I look forward to that. I mean, summer's coming. I would look forward more to the Yankee game if it wasn't indoors in Tropicana. Maybe the worst stadium in baseball. Not really where you want to see a baseball game. Outside of maybe Oakland. But I guess it's the Yankees. But I'm baseball all day. I do kind of like that. It's a game at 1, a game at 4, and a game at 8. So I'm looking forward to all that. 2 drafts tonight. It'll be a busy day.
Yeah, I've never been to Tropicana Field, but from the looks of it and the sound of it and all the reviews I've gotten over the years from people that have been, I think it would probably rank dead last.
I have a lot of family in Tampa. Ton of family in Tampa. They say the stadium itself is okay. The problem is getting there. There's like only one road in and out, and it's a nightmare.
It's a big problem. Yeah, it's in St. Pete. It's not even in Tampa, technically. So it is a pain to get over there, and a lot of people, frankly, just don't do it. They don't want to bother going over there to the stadium experience, which isn't all that great. And then, you know, this is also throughout the life cycle of the Rays, too. They were pumped to have a team but didn't really show up in droves. You had some economic issues coupled with the fact that even when the Rays got good, they still weren't showing up in droves. Like, they weren't selling out playoff games. And when they were playing the Sox in big games, they were really the Sox fans would overwhelm the Tampa fans in a lot of different ways. So, you know, we'll see what can happen there long term. There's obviously been some rumors over the years of them moving to a new location. Can you see that happening? What location would you expect that to be?
Well, you know, baseball has to be jealous. When you think of the NFL, is there any team now that has a bad stadium in football? I mean, really, the NFL...
Once Oakland moves... No.
Right, they were the last ones. And now baseball, you really have two teams that are just in dire straits. I mean, Tampa Bay and Oakland are just a disaster as far as stadiums are concerned. Oakland's probably in worse shape than Tampa, because we've all heard the stories. They have sewage. It's just gross. So they got all sorts of issues there in Oakland, which is why the Raiders are leaving, right? And they can't build a stadium in San Jose. Tampa, are they going to get a new stadium there eventually? I know the lease there is longer, so maybe they're stuck. But you wonder if eventually Tampa is moving.
Yeah, I would think that it's a possibility that the Charlotte comes up. As a possibility, we've heard that before. Could Vegas remain a possibility? We shall see. I would probably put my money on Charlotte over Vegas, but now that the NFL has dipped their toe in that water, I think it would open up possibilities for other leagues, wouldn't you think?
Well, you know, the NHL did something that no one else ever thought anybody would do.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I can't.
Franchise there.
Yeah, yeah. I can't dismiss the Golden Knights. Yes, yeah, I agree. I can't dismiss the Golden Knights. I would imagine they had some. Yeah, I would imagine they had some impact on this somewhere along.
They had to. Somebody had to break that barrier, and the NHL did it. And then said, "Oh, you know, one league did it. Why can't we?" It's in this day and age. It's silly anyway. If you want to bet online, you could easily do it online. You don't need a team to be in the state, the city to do it. So I guess that. It's curious how it's going to work out, but I get what you're hinting at. You do wonder if baseball's going to be like, you know, hey, football's there, hockey's there. You know, Vegas wants a baseball team. I think what we'll need to see is can Vegas support football and hockey? You know, mainly probably more hockey than football. You know, can they support this team? Are they going to get those luxury boxes filled for, you know, for hockey, it's 41 games a season. You know, baseball will be paying close attention to this. You know, do they have corporate sponsors? How are things going here? I think it's curious to see how it works out. But I think it's still, for baseball to move there is probably 5 to 8 years down the line.
Interesting. That'd be a long time, obviously. It's a pretty long life cycle. But I would say regarding corporate sponsorships, I don't think these NFL teams are going to struggle at all. I think the NFL in some ways, and Goodell and his office in particular, are going to feel a little bit weary about there being casinos that are the significant local corporate sponsors, and you know it'll be the you know the Wynn lounge and suites, and it'll be the Bellagio roof deck or whatever. You know, the Mets have the porch up there that's sponsored, and the Yankees have different sponsored sections. I'm just speaking from local experience. I think there's going to be hotel and casino corporate logos all over that place, I would imagine, don't you think?
Yeah, the football's not the problem. You know, it's going to be the Bellagio first, whatever you want to call it. I get where you're going with the bub. I can't think of anything such as the Bellagio base pass, whatever you want to call it. So yeah. Yes, there'll be a lot of sponsors like that. That'll be fun. Funny to see how it works out. You know, one thing about football, they are hypocritical. You know, you just think about it, last year they wouldn't let Tony Romo and a bunch of other players do their fantasy football convention outside. Of a casino. Now they're in Vegas, so you know it's whatever's good for the goose. I find it funny, but
it's whichever way the wind is blowing for them at the time.
Exactly,
and they'll figure out a way to justify it. Their stance still very much is that gambling isn't good for the NFL, but really that's an easy stance for them to take. It seems ridiculous at a surface level, but they don't have to get involved until they really want to get involved. So for them, they can just sit on the sidelines and don't have to actively participate while people gamble billions on the sport legally and illegally. they don't have to have a handshake deal for all these gambling deals, although, you know, obviously our industry and DFS has kind of shed a spotlight on that to some extent.
Yeah, although technically we're not gambling because we don't have a point spread, so we get away with it there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not declaring it gambling. I'm just saying that world has forced the NFL to take a hard look at the entire, both our industry and the gambling industry in general.
Yeah. Well, the NFL's poured into DFS big time. I mean, Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones are big time owners of DraftKings and FanDuel.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's one thing about the NFL they've understood more over the years than any of these other sports is how to. NFL understood a long time ago fantasy is a really good thing for our sport.
No doubt.
You know, they understood that, hey, it's more money coming in, more eyeballs on the games, more people buying jerseys and merchandise, stuff like that. Baseball's been a little slow to it. You know, they don't quite get it. You think about, 4 or 5 years ago, baseball wanted a charge to have their statistics out there for the online sites. Think about how ridiculous that is. But yeah, they wanted a charge for that. You know, it's like, are you crazy? You're keeping people away from you. You know, football does understand that. You know, I always give football that. They always know how to play to the people. That's why their marketing is just so fantastic. They make everything an event in football. Everything's an event in football. You know, we got the draft coming up. The baseball draft nobody cares about. It'll be a big event in football when the schedule comes out. Yes, people have shows on this. Like, I need to be told what big games are coming up this season. But it'll be a huge thing. You know, and it just goes on and on and on. We all know when a training camp, OTAs are a big thing. Practice in June. You know, May. You know, 17th is the big day. Big Tony Romo day is April 17th now because the Cowboys might have to release him by that date so he doesn't get hurt and they're screwed for his salary. And we all know these dates. And in baseball, I barely know when spring training starts in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see when we open up the NFL season in September on that Thursday night. It's going to be a big show, concert. They'll get a named concert going on outside the stadium. Everybody's going to get pumped up an hour, 2 hours before the game, and then we kick off and they get a big rating. Today in Tampa, Tanaka versus Archer, you think there's going to be any kind of legitimate concert outside or a big production show? I doubt it, but we'll see. maybe they'll follow suit and try something like that. I just think it would be it might come off poorly on TV because it's a chance that it'll be somewhat lightly attended as opposed to a 80 to 90,000 football stadium being packed out. So we'll talk about opening day. We'll go through today's lineups, today's options. We did a little bit yesterday. We'll continue to do that today. We've got draft talk coming up, both with George and the Grant Street Tavern League that many of our experts competed in yesterday. Sadly, Mike Cardano, our esteemed colleague and boss, is going to let George and I help manage his team. The fact that he hasn't sent me our team 24 hours after the draft is a little disconcerting, so we'll have to talk about that during the course of the draft. We got NFL stuff to go over, draft, Richard Sherman, why is he potentially being traded, and much more for the next 3 hours on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. This is their Saturday Night Fever stuff.
Disco.
Did you watch it yesterday? You get a chance to watch yesterday? Fire on Saturday Night Fever? All right.
I think yesterday I binged The Americans a little bit. Ever watched The Americans?
That's with Kerry Russell? Is that the actress
that's on it? Yeah, that might be her name.
No, I haven't seen it.
I'm not very good at actresses. It's an interesting show about the...
You watch a lot and you don't know these people. I don't understand this.
Why do I need to know who it is?
I don't know.
I love The Walking Dead. I don't think I can tell you one Walking Dead other than Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who plays Negan. That's the only actor I can tell you in that show.
That's odd to me. You and I could sit here and name half the NFL or more and most of Major League Baseball. You can't know the two or three main actors on a given show. Anyway, what is The Americans even about? I've seen commercials for it. It's the only reason I know that Kerry Russell is on it.
Two Russian spies living in the United States in the Reagan area, so mid-80s.
Okay.
It's not a lot of action, more of a drama, more story, but very well written, very pretty good show. But if you're somebody who wants action, you know, somebody dying, car chases and things blowing up, then it's not the show for you.
Okay. Well, the blowing up show wouldn't be the show for me, so maybe we'll give it a shout. Anyway, one story that was somewhat popular this past week, we didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday, but that's all right, was Richard Sherman and a lot of the rumors regarding him being traded. Now, Richard Sherman initially was laughing off these trade rumors, but Pete Carroll basically came out and said, yeah, we've been taking calls on it. We like Richard. We think he's a great person. We think he's a great human being. We think he's an excellent player. But there was the tone of it was basically, and he did it as politically as he could, but the tone of Carroll's comments to me were basically like, yeah, we're taking calls here because I think we're getting a little, I think we're over him being an outspoken guy, at least internally. So we're shopping calls. Now, I don't think anybody can freak out because teams will take calls really on any player to see what kind of offer they can drum up. But in this instance, it seems like there's a little bit of motivation on the part of the Seahawks. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree. You mentioned he's outspoken. Plus, remember, he had some run-ins with his own. There were some fights. More verbal fights and confrontations on the sidelines last year in Seattle. Sherman pretty much calling out the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much said he could run better plays. Then he had, there were other, I guess, teammates blaming other teammates for not being in the right position, not making plays, whatever it might be. And Sherman was a part of that. You know, we've seen this before with players who are outspoken like this. Sometimes, you know, you talk the talk. You better be able to walk the walk. And if you're the one making mistakes, they're going to call you out. And that secondary wasn't as good last year, especially once Earl Thomas went down. So I think, you know, Seattle, maybe this act may be wearing a little thin in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, Richard Sherman is a great player and amongst the top corners in the whole league. I don't think anybody can really deny that. But the key to that secondary has always been, in my mind and in many people's minds, is Earl Thomas. He's kind of the playmaker. He's the QB there. I think you take any single player away from that secondary, they're obviously going to get worse, whether it's Sherman or Chancellor or Thomas. But when Thomas goes down, what did Seattle finish the season? 4-4? They lost four of their last eight games, I believe, including the playoff game. So they did not finish strong, and Earl Thomas was gone really for all of that. I think that was their record, 4-4, once he went down. True?
Yeah, they were a different team without him. Yeah, he was the quarterback of that secondary. I guess someone they really relied on, someone that they could afford to play more aggressive with and know if they make a mistake, wide receiver gets behind him. Hey, Earl's back there. Not a problem. And it caused a domino effect, a roll-down effect of the rest of the defense there. Like I said, I think for Pete Carroll, I'm sure it's the run-ins with the coaching staff, where pretty much Sherman was really out of line. You don't do that, especially not in public. You want to yell at the coaches, and I guess in private, that's one thing. But doing it in a public forum, that's another. That's pretty much, you know, not being disciplined, certainly not playing by team rules, especially if our team's been as successful as Seattle. But I think you said it perfectly. You know, if I'm Pete Carroll, all I would have said is this. Listen, I'll listen to any offers. I'll always listen to offers. Sure, we've talked, Sherman, teams have inquired about him. Doesn't mean I'm actively shopping him, but I'll listen to anybody. And I think you sort of put that to bed if you want to put it to bed. Now, maybe Pete Carroll didn't want to put it to bed. You know, maybe he wanted this to be sort of getting Sherman said that, hey, you know, cut it out or else you're going to be on another team. You know, that wouldn't shock me either.
Yeah, so we had two. What was interesting about his quotes, too, as he continued to go on, it was him saying that Richard had a really tough year last year, and he mentioned that a number of different times. You know, Richard had a tough year. He fought through it. He's trying to have a great offseason, but we really saw him struggle a lot last year, which is a lot for a coach to say. If you're the player, you don't want to see people out there kind of putting your business out there about how you had a tough season when, you know, ultimately everybody's working towards the same goal. I just thought there were comments that he made, which he didn't come right out and blast him. It wasn't anything like that. But, you know, the best we can do with coaches, George, is, as you have said many times, how do you know when a coach is lying? When his lips are moving. So we do our best to try to read the tea leaves of these interviews or watch these interviews and see exactly how it was intended. Ultimately, I thought that the comments were pretty pointed, that Sherman struggled last year. We need to be all on the same page kind of stuff. We had the two outbursts that were notable. One was against, I think it was during the Atlanta game, where those guys just got after each other on the sideline. Julio was having a huge game. Julio Jones was having a huge game against them. And those guys just got into it. Obviously, certain players got injured during the course of the season, and they were trying to use other guys. And I think, you know, there was a little miscommunication on certain plays, and they got into a scuffle. Chancellor was in the middle of it trying to break it up, but Sherman and other guys were going after one another, a little bit of a shoving match on the sidelines, which honestly, for I think many fans overblow that kind of stuff. I think it is noteworthy to talk about, but in many instances, those shoving matches happen, and it's forgotten by the end of the day, correct?
Agreed. Yeah, I think those happen more often than not. It's just when it happens with name players, and when it happens over and over again, that's the problem.
Exactly. So that was the situation here. It happened more than once, and then there was an incident later in the season where Seattle called a pass on the 1 yard line, incomplete pass. It was first and goal or something along those lines, and it fell incomplete. And Sherman really expressed his displeasure for that, as he said, effectively calling out the offense, which is a no-no. I heard a couple players, ex-players, talking about that earlier this week, and it's like, listen, everybody's okay to express themselves to a point, but if you start sticking your nose in the other side of the team's business, then we have a problem. Whether it's offense talking about defense or defense talking about offense, people get into it. Defensive players get on each other all the time. That's cue the shoving match that I was just talking about. And offensive players can get into it. But if a defensive back walks over to the offensive coordinator or the quarterback and starts trash talking or getting in their face about what they need to do better, then that's a breakdown.
Yeah, you can't have that. I mean, once again, is anybody bothering you when you make a mistake? You know, when you let up a pass, so you really it's dangerous when you do that sort of thing. I understand where Sherman was coming from. I'm sure that pass on the 1 yard line brought back memories that maybe he didn't want to have brought back. But like I said, there's no problem with doing it in practice the next day. You know, next time you're seeing each other, you want to talk, fine. You don't do it in a public during a game where you know all the cameras are on you, especially when you've had this problem before. You know, this is it's sort of also the penalty for being so outspoken. You know, we see Des Bryant get in trouble for doing this because he's outspoken. We've seen him do it before. So the cameras are on you on the side. They're waiting for you to do this. So they're hoping you do because it gives something for everybody to talk about, something for everybody to see. So in the end, you're right. Most of this is much ado about nothing. You know, it all get worked out. But you wonder if this is, like I said, once again, Pete Carroll letting Sherman know this has to stop. You know, if not,
I agree.
You could be moved.
Yeah. And you know, I don't think Richard Sherman will take kindly to being sent messages like that. So I think he'll just keep doing what he's doing. And if Seattle feels motivated, this is generally the time that something will happen, right? We're leading up to the draft. Teams will see what kind of blockbuster they can pull off. Hell, I'd like to see him in Pittsburgh if they can pull that off. But he's going to come with a pretty hefty price tag.
I'll take him to Dallas.
He's 20. Yeah, no kidding. You guys lost everybody this offseason.
Take anybody
old
in Dallas.
He just turned 29 this week, so just a few days ago, and we'll see exactly how that plays out. I mean, ultimately, last year, he had 4 picks last year. I don't really judge him by the number of interceptions that he has. He had 38 tackles, 20 assists. It's less about that than him, you know, defending passes and making things difficult for the other teams. He is a playmaker, yes, and he's led the league in interceptions in the past, but you know, we all know as defensive backs, particularly corners, get better. The teams throw at them less, so you can't look at those types of totals. Ultimately, he's a very good player, might have had a little bit of an off year last year, and we'll see what kind of price that commands as we head down towards the draft in the next couple of weeks. So we're going to talk about the draft in the next segment. George and I talk just a little bit of updates, some fantasy projections, perhaps, and talk a little bit about our update. We talked about the young quarterbacks yesterday. I want to talk about a couple of other positions as we move towards the NFL draft at the end of this month. So it's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. You can hit us up on Twitter today at FNTSY Radio, where we just put a poll up. It's about baseball since today's opening day, or is it? The poll is baseball starts today. You can find this at FNTSY Radio. Baseball starts today, but some purists think it's not official until tomorrow. So which day do you think is opening day? Is it today or is it tomorrow? Really easy answers, but I know some people don't think today is official. Now that there's three games in this soft opening, George, it's getting hard to argue the latter. So I think technically today's opening day, even though a lot of the fanfare around the league will occur tomorrow.
Yeah, I think what you said, the last point there is the argument. Now, there are three games today, so therefore it is opening day. It's not an opening night game. Yankees played during the day. It's one of three games. I think today's opening day.
Yeah, it almost makes me wistful for the time where it was just left all and everything starts all at once. And, you know, a few games, most of the teams would play on Monday. A couple of teams would wait until Tuesday. And for a long time, Cincinnati was the historic opening day. And then it got to Toronto, started doing it. So, it's gone through its changes over the years. But nonetheless, feel free to vote on that poll. Our early leader is today. So the purists may lose this one, but we'll see. So, George, want to talk a little bit about the mock drafts. We talked some about the quarterback situation yesterday and how they're falling on some boards, but not all. So what I want to talk about today, since it's a fantasy sports show, is about the other skill players, and specifically running back to start it off. Now, I said yesterday that I saw some projections that had Fournette all the way up at number four, and I'm looking at five different mock drafts right now on NFL.com, and these are from their writers and analysts. You got Chad Reuter, Charlie Casserly, Lance Zierlein, Daniel Jeremiah, and Bucky Brooks. So some former front office guys in there. They all have Myles Garrett number one. I think that's a foregone conclusion. I think the Browns can start negotiating whenever they like. Solomon Thomas from Stanford has a defensive lineman that has shot up draft boards and seems like he's settling in at number two, and then it starts to change up a little bit from there. Jonathan Allen, a really popular projection at number three to the Bears. But at number four is where we see the guy that I first wanted to start talking about, because we've seen some fluctuation amongst the running backs. I think everybody concedes that the top three running backs and the only three, well, the most likely three to go in the first round of the draft are Leonard Fournette out of LSU, Dalvin Cook out of Florida State, and Christian McCaffrey out of Stanford, his dad, former NFL player. So right now, according to these five experts, George, we have three of them saying that Fournette will go fourth to the Jaguars. It seems a little surprising to me, but there aren't any offensive linemen that are worth that kind of value in the draft. They've addressed a lot defensively through trades, through free agency, and the like. And here they sit at number four. Despite picking up Chris Ivory in free agency last year, the three of these five experts think they're going after a running back here. What are your thoughts?
It does make sense. I think, once again, it depends on organizational philosophy here. I think Tom Coughlin does like to have a strong running game. Obviously, it'll help the defense if you keep the opposing offense off the field, control the clock more. So I get it. But do you want to spend that high a pick on a running back in this day and age? Most teams don't like to do that because the running backs are a little easier to find. You know, it's also, you saw them, you know, are they going to be a little gun-shy? And what I mean by that is, well, you know, you drafted T.J. Yeldon 2 years ago. You got Chris Ivory in free agency last year. Now you're going back to the well and spending, you know, another high pick on Fournette. You know, it's interesting. I also wonder maybe if Jacksonville says, hey, maybe we should trade down from here. Is there another team that really wants Fournette? You know, to want to trade, come up and trade and trade. And maybe move down four, five, six slots, still keep a top 10 pick, and get another pick, get a third round pick, whatever it might be. I wonder if that's the way they're going to go here. So I think it's interesting here. I think all in all, I think the pick would make sense. Because a strong running game, would that also help Blake Bortles? Maybe him stop throwing the ball to the other team? You know, so I think that's interesting there as well.
Yeah, but I've never really considered that last year that it was a running back talent issue. Do you know what I mean? They had an Ivory Yeldon 1-2 punch that it's not amongst the greatest that we've ever seen, and it's certainly not what Atlanta has, but with Freeman and Coleman. But I never really considered that to be a problem. I didn't think Ivory was failing because he's just lost that step. I just thought that There wasn't a lot of holes opening up. The offense was out of sync and didn't really move the ball until they were down double digits, and then Bortles just haphazardly threw his way towards 4,500 yards or whatever he finished with last year. I just didn't really think that was the case. So he's a unique talent. I think he's shown himself to be a playmaker. He's got a ton of size and has got a lot of quickness and speed for somebody that big. So I wouldn't ever criticize anybody for taking him in the first round. I just don't know that the Jaguars at number four are the team that I anticipated taking him at any point.
Yeah, I just think you wonder if they're just tired of Yeldon's been a disappointment from day one. Really hasn't done much. Chris Ivory had that strange injury right before the season opener last year that we still don't know what it actually was. Was it an injury? Was it a medical problem? Really, one of the strangest stories of during the season that happened there. So I wonder if they just figure, hey, we'll take Fournette, and it's a position we don't have to worry about. You know, now we're done. Got Fournette. Yeah. We can move on to fix something else.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. They just settle in, and Coughlin isn't married to Doug Marrone, right? He basically came in after that was already decided. So he's going to, you know, there was a thought process they were going to keep Marrone. I think Coughlin probably could have moved in another direction if he wanted. But I think he's happy to keep some consistency there and see what they have. Because, honestly, if Bortles doesn't work out, he's going to have to blow up part of the team anyway and go find another quarterback and find another new head coach, conceivably. You know, if they scuffle to another 3 or 4 win season, people are going to lose their jobs. And, you know, if it's a 3 or 4 win season, Bortles is going to lose his job in the middle of the season.
You know, I would have COVID started to think, you know, maybe if Marrone can't get it done, I'll get back on the sideline again. This wouldn't shock me either. Listen, this the second year in a row that Jacksonville's done a lot of offseason work. A lot of player additions, a lot of moving around where they look like a much improved team. Don't worry, Mike. I'm not going to go in over say anything stupid again. But they look good again. Okay? Yes, I predicted Jacksonville maybe to win that division last year. That didn't turn out so well.
It's all right. So, it's all right. I had Arizona in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but I think I had that too. So I'm not going to say anything stupid like that. So, now we'll see. Yeah, you know, I do like what they've done, but I think you also hit the nail on the head here. Can Bortles take that next step into an NFL quarterback, not a fantasy one? Fantasy, he was top 10. As scary as that sounds, he was top 10. NFL-wise, yeah. He was bottom 10.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to take that next step? Do you think he has that opportunity? Or do you think he's going to succeed? Everybody has the opportunity. Do you think he's going to succeed?
You know, as a fan of the game, you hope so. Yeah, I mean, he would seem like he has everything in place to do so. He has weapons in the receiving core, you know, with Robinson, Marquise Lee took a big step up. You know, Hearns, he should be able to do that. You mentioned the offensive line. Okay, that's not going to be great, but it's not poor. You know, defense should be better, so he should have more chances. He shouldn't feel the pressure to have to put up 30 points every game. But if you ask me, do I expect him to? I just don't know at this point.
Yeah. So other teams that they have projected for Leonard Fournette. One, Lanzierlein has him going to the Jets at 6. 3 have him going there, and 1 has him going to the Panthers. But Charlie Casserly, for example, also has Dalvin Cook going to the Panthers. So it seems like I have a feeling there could be some fluctuation. I wouldn't shock me if McCaffrey ends up getting picked in front of Dalvin Cook. Like Daniel Jeremiah has Fournette at 8 to the Panthers. He has McCaffrey at 11 to the Saints. And then is Dalvin Cook all the way down at 27 to the Chiefs. And he's not the only writer or analyst that has Dalvin Cook falling all the way down there. There's been some, I don't know, off the field or character questions regarding Cook. I don't know how serious they are. I talked about this on our NFL Combine show. There's really nothing of consequence in the last several years. It seems like kind of teenager stuff, which isn't great. But at the same time, you know, how much emphasis can we put on mistakes that these guys made when they were 16 or 17? It could be them just being teenage knuckleheads. And, you know, I kind of have to move past it at some point. But frankly, the teams are the ones interviewing the players and figuring out the character evaluations. That's not something we're really privy to. We can only kind of read what other analysts and other insiders, what kind of information they're taking from that. So I concede that. But I really like McCaffrey a lot as a player. I find him to be very explosive, especially in today's NFL with how good a pass catcher he is. He's worked out for a lot of teams at wide receiver so they can see how good he is in the slot. But, I mean, the Saints as a landing spot for him would be pretty interesting, especially considering they just lost Brandon Cooks to the Pats in a trade.
Yeah, that was a, I guess, I shouldn't say it's a surprise, right? I think Cooks, so what Sherman did in, has been doing in Seattle, Cooks was doing in New Orleans, complaining about, you know, his role in the offense, especially when your team's winning games big. So, and they saw his way out of there, especially when his contract was going to come up in a couple of years. So, a little surprising there. Do they go for that, you know, try and help the offense there? I would think so. Mainly because what New Orleans is all about Drew Brees, right? And he doesn't have forever left. He's got, what, 2, 3, 4 years maybe left? So they're going to continue to build around Drew Brees.
Yeah. You think he has that many left, 4 years left?
I think that's, listen, if everything goes well, I mean, if I was to put a, I would think the over-under is 2.5.
Yeah, we got some guys, man. It's amazing that, you know, just due to the manner in which players are protected is a huge factor here, but also the way players are able to take care of themselves and kind of extend their shelf life. He's 38. He turned 38 in January. So I'll give him 2 more years. So I would take the under on 2.5.
You're taking the under. I'm going to go the over. I'm going to give him 3.
I would take the under. But, yeah, if he squeaked out a third season, I could see it. He's good at getting rid of the ball, obviously, and he doesn't get beat up a ton, but, you know, he's 38 years old. It doesn't matter if he's gotten much more savvy about not getting hit. He's still gotten hit a million times over the course of his career. It's going to take its toll. Same with Tom Brady at some point. I mean, he's the best, really, at not getting hit, but at some point there's going to be an issue for Brees. He led the league in completions, in attempts, in yards, in the longest play of the year, in yards per game. I mean, there's a lot of ways in which he's still dominating fantasy. So 5,200 yards, which was his first 5,000-yard season since 2013. 2014 and 2015 came up just shy. So there you go on that. As far as the rest of the running backs, you know, Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, they're kind of all over the board. I do think it's interesting some of the landing spots they have for him. Like Chad Reuter has, let me see where I can find it. Is Christian McCaffrey going to Denver? And Dalvin Cook going to the Chiefs. Denver, we've struggled to find a running back there that we can fall in love with, so I don't know that we need to throw another one on the pile.
Yeah, I mean, it would make some sense there. I get it. You know, Anderson's been somewhat disappointing. Could stay healthy last year, so it does make some sense. But once again, in today's NFL, I'm always going to wonder, does the team believe in taking a running back early? You know, especially one that's not, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, you know, and I think Fournette for that matter, are different animals. You know, we're talking, yeah, these guys could be great running backs. You know, we're talking about the guys who just may be good running backs, you know, not really that much above anybody else. Because some teams look at running backs being dime a dozen, you know, and their shelf life is so small. You know, a lot of running backs, you know, 3, 4 years, you get one contract out of them. The rookie, that's it. After that, they're done. You know, their best years are behind them. Most run, not all. Of course, you're going to have the superstars who play for much longer. But that's the way some GMs are going to look at this. It's just not worth, you know, a top 10 pick, not even worth a first round pick. So you really need to get into the heads of these general managers to see if they believe it's worth that. And I also wonder, you know, this is what I like to point up on a lot of shows. These GMs are human. You know, they're not playing for 10 years down the line. They got to win now, or so they're not going to have a job. So I think that plays into it as well. What do they need most to win now to save their job? Is it a running back? Is it that pass rusher, offensive line, wide receiver, quarterback, whatever it might be? So I think that plays a big part of it as well.
True. I think you're right. And I think we'll continue to take a look at this draft as we scream towards the end of April. And when we light it up, I think April 28th is the date. I could be wrong on that, but I believe that is the date, that Thursday, that last Thursday in April.
I think it's the 27th, actually.
Yeah, it might be right. So the 27th, that last Thursday in April. We'll double check the date, but that should be it. So I'll talk a little bit about MLB park factors in the final segment of the hour. It's going to be baseball mainly for the rest of the day, but it's Mike and George all the way till 10 o'clock. Welcome back. Excuse me. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike and George here until 10. I would encourage you to go to rotoexperts.com as we wind down draft season, but transition into the full season of Major League Baseball with opening day upon us. George and I are, you know, maybe we were wistful for the time where everything would open on the same day, but I'm going to concede that I think today is opening day, even though I prefer it to be all at once. So three games today, as we mentioned earlier, Yankees, Rays, Giants, D-backs, and Cubs, Cardinals throughout the day. But go to rotoexperts.com to get your exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package. You can stay ahead of the competition with in-depth articles and insights from our award-winning analysts like George. Prepare for your draft with our new and improved cheat sheet generator. Get access to fully sortable projections and over 800 player profiles. Enter promo code free radio at checkout for a special discount on the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package. So George, one thing I wanted to talk to you about, and we're going to get to your hot or not article in the next hour, but one thing I wanted to talk to you about, because it's something that we talk about and sometimes gloss over, and it's something that, frankly, I've found over the last couple of years that I needed to pay more attention to regarding fantasy baseball as I get deeper into it, is park factors. And I wanted to get an idea from you, you know, how much you're taking that into account over the course of, say, your draft and over the course of the season. I think we would both understand, and everybody out there listening on this Sunday morning would understand that when it comes to DFS, park factors play a massive role. But when it comes to going into a draft or understanding how players can play over the course of the season because of what their schedule looks like, I mean, how much emphasis are you putting onto park factors over the course of the year? We all know about Coors Field being the most favorable place for hitters to play. But beyond that, you know, just give me a sense of how you approach it. I always find that interesting how people are approaching that from a draft standpoint.
Well, I think when it comes to park factors, you sort of mentioned it. I guess the easiest term is in DFS, it's very specific. Yeah, I'm looking, are you always looking, is Colorado playing at home? What, Colorado's playing at home? Oh, got to stack the Rockies. Got to stack whoever they're playing. It's the first thing you look at there. You know, and when it comes to the year-long leagues, it's more general. Yeah, I wouldn't mind a Rocky on my team. Maybe a couple of Red Sox. You know they're going to score 1,000 runs in Fenway. You know that Detroit's going to score a lot of runs, Tigers. So you want some of their plays, if possible. At best, though, it would be more a tiebreaker situation. You know, okay, I got a player on the Red Sox, player on the Dodgers. Have both ranked evenly. Okay, let's go with the Red Sox player. You know, we know Fenway, better chance for him to score, get some more home runs. You know, you got the Green Monster. Other than that, don't worry about it all that much. I know when it comes to pitchers, any kind of tiebreaker always goes towards the National League. Many of those ballparks are bigger, the lineups are easier. You know, you face the pitcher. You know, see, I'm always going to hedge in that direction. So, like I said, when it comes to our year-long leagues, I don't give park factors a whole lot of love, but I'm very much aware of it. I certainly know not to draft any Rockies starting pitchers. Yeah, I like John Gray. I think he could be the best starting pitcher the Rockies have ever had. Still don't want him on my fantasy team. You know, there's just not much upside there. You know, I don't know how many wins he's going to get for that team, and the ratios aren't going to be there, so it's really just strikeouts. No, thank you. Not it's not worth it for me unless he's available late in my draft. Even though I think the guy's a very good pitcher, I just don't think pitching in Coors it's going to work. It hasn't worked for anybody else yet. And so someone shows the formula they've had to pitch there. I don't want a Rockies pitcher. Maybe a closer. You know, if they had an elite closer, I could be convinced of that. But other than that, no. But when you look at Rocky hitters, sure, there's a reason. But this is why we give them a bump in the draft anyway. There's a reason why. Players like Blackman, Story, Desmond before he got hurt. Arenado was great anyway. But there's a reason why these guys were all bumped up on our draft. It was because of the ballpark factor already. You know, so there's no reason to give them an extra bump up now.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. And you can go. There's a variety of different places you can go. I just happen to be looking at ESPN at the moment, but there's a variety of different places you can go to take a look at ballpark factors. And I know we write about it on rotoexperts.com, but you know, runs scored per game favors the Rockies the most. But when it comes to homers, Yankee Stadium was actually the most favorable for players hitting home runs on the road versus hitting at Yankee anywhere else versus hitting at Yankee Stadium. So Yankee Stadium effectively the easiest place to hit a home run in Major League Baseball in 2016.
Yeah, and it probably will be in 2017 too. Yankees are even a better hitting team this year than they were last year. So the home runs are going to be hit. And listen, when you this is once again, this goes more towards DFS, but it could play into your daily lineups as well. As far as if you're in a daily lineup league, you know, you look at Yankee Stadium. You get a soft tossing right hander on the mound. Well, hey, you may want to get those left-handed hitters during Yankee Stadium in the lineup. Same thing for Fenway. Soft-tossing left-hander? Okay. You know, you got to get your righties in there in Fenway. You know, any kind of soft-tosser in Colorado, you're putting everybody and their mother in the lineup in Coors Field. You do need to look at that, yeah.
Yeah, and as far as the most difficult places they hit a home run last year, bottom five were Marlins Park, Kauffman Stadium, Turner Field, which is no longer, Oakland Coliseum, and then AT&T Park. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody that's listening, but AT&T Park, extremely difficult for left-handed hitters as well. But Turner Field, I guess the one thing we're going to have to take into account, what's this new stadium going to look like, right? So that's an X factor.
It is. We don't know how it's going to play. We did see it Friday night. It was a nice stadium. Were a couple of home runs. It looks like it's going to be, at the very least, a neutral ballpark, maybe an edge towards being a pitcher's ballpark.
Good stuff. So that's 1 hour down. We got two to go. It's a baseball extravaganza for the rest of the way. Opening day is upon us. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.